Moncrief on News Talk.
Many people are still asking, why are we letting people into the country at all? Or, more to the point, why don't we have a more rigorous isolation regime for new arrivals? Tomorrow, the Independent Scientific Advisory Group will hold a webinar on the case for travel quarantine in Ireland. Dr. Gabriel Scally joins us now on News Talk. Good afternoon, Gabriel.
Hello. Good to be with you.
Are there figures, Gabriel, on arrivals into the country and how that's affecting the rate of COVID infection here?
No, there aren't. And it's a terrible pity that there aren't really strong data supporting decision making about this. But that just emphasizes how lax the controls are. We know the virus came to Britain and Ireland from abroad, and we know that it has continued to come. For example, at the end of the summer, the Spanish variant came to Ireland by means of international travel, probably returning holidaymakers or alternatively tourists. And it very quickly became the dominant virus in the island. So we know the virus does come. We know it spreads. And we know that there isn't really any barrier to that spread, which is in particularly now, I think, Sean, particularly now when we know that there are dangerous variants cropping up across the world, having open borders to the virus is really, really bad news.
And indeed, as has been widely reported, there were around 1,500 people arrived from Brazil in the last 2 weeks. And there is a Brazilian variant that we haven't... I don't think it's been detected here yet, but that doesn't really look good.
No, it doesn't. And these variants, so far, what we've seen is there's a real probability that they increase the transmissibility of the virus, so it's easier to catch this particular variant. What is most worrying is that variants will pop up, and they will pop up as long as there's plenty of virus circulating and spreading and replicating. That's what produces these mutants. Those variants could possibly dodge the vaccine or produce even more transmissibility or some other really nasty effects of the virus on those that get infected. So the only safe way to deal with this virus is really to keep it at arm's length. And from a country's point of view, that arm's length means putting controls on your ports and airports.
Are there countries that one could say are the gold standard or as close as we can get in terms of introducing travel quarantine?
Oh, there are very large numbers. Just for interest, a couple of weeks ago, I took a list of the... And there's a great website called Worldometer. And I went through the long list of countries that they had data for about COVID there. And I picked out 61 island countries, either... just one country on one island or maybe sharing an island as we do in Ireland with two jurisdictions. Anyway, I went through that list and right up at the top were Britain and Ireland because most islands have done it really, really well. And there are the well-publicised ones like, well, Australia is a continent more than an island. It's just huge. New Zealand, Taiwan. Taiwan's had a fantastic record. Closer to home, the Isle of Man, very close to home. The Isle of Man has done a good job. Guernsey, one of the Channel Islands, another small island, doing a good job. So there are plenty of examples of really industrialized countries, really densely populated countries like Taiwan or countries with very dispersed population like New Zealand or tiny populations. All sorts of islands can do this if they want to. And if ever there was a time to want to do it, let's do it now.
And does that, you know, in nuts and bolts terms, that involves if you arrive off a plane, you're put on a bus and you're sent somewhere and you're kept there for the next fortnight?
Yes. Well, it means replacing what we've got at the moment, which is kind of voluntary isolation. You know, when you look at the guidance that is available, it's full of advised and requested and should with a kind of must. And the must is that you must be in managed isolation so that everyone can be sure that it will be adhered to. And one of the great errors, I think, has been when we've had this kind of voluntary self-isolation going on, we haven't really monitored it to see what proportion have observed it. And the feeling is that it's really quite small. But it's not. It's like trying to, you know, keep the water out with a sieve. And we can't have that, really, if you want to get the virus under control in the country, as You know, as Ireland did, north and south, last summer, zero deaths for day upon day upon day, north and south, really small number of cases, single figures daily cases in the north and in the low teens in the Republic. Now, that virus resurged again, and the only place it could come from really was from outside. And I think we had large numbers of people bringing the virus to Ireland's shore because there were no defences in place.
And at the moment, Ireland and many countries, they want to, you know, you arrive with a negative test result. Is that really that effective, given that you might have got it 2 days before that and then got infected?
Well, indeed, that is the problem. I think all of these things are additive one to the other. So the requirement at the moment for a lot of places, particularly South America, because of the Brazilian variant that you mentioned, and is for before you travel having to have a test, so that you produce, along with your passport at departures, you produce your negative test result in some sort of verifiable form. And you're quite right, that can be up to 72 hours before arrival in your destination. So you could have got it along the way. And we know that people travel using mass travel to get to airports. Sometimes they're in lounges in airports. Sometimes they're transiting through other busy airports. Again, more lounges travel on the aeroplanes and travel getting off the plane, then get to your destination. And all of that makes that one test that you had 3 days, perhaps, before getting on your flight, really a nonsense. It doesn't work like that.
Now, you did mention that last summer, both north and south were doing pretty well. And despite the fact that this has been with us for the best part of a year now, there seems to be no joined up thinking in terms of an all-island approach. Why do you think that is?
Well, for the life of me, I don't know. I was very early on in this pandemic, I was writing and publishing places and calling for an all-Ireland approach. And we did see a memorandum of understanding signed between the North and the South, between the Republic and Northern Ireland. And I cheered that. And the language in it is great. It's all about harmonisation and cooperation. And so, but we haven't actually seen any effect from it at all. And when ministers have been asked, it's in Dublin, when they've been asked, they've kind of shook their heads and said, oh, it's all too difficult, we can't do that, it's not possible, and so on. And in the north, it's been a subject of political difference between the ministers, depending on their political outlook, and which is, I know, extraordinarily disappointing. And I think it's an awful shame our politicians north and south couldn't lay aside their prejudices or their inability to discuss things rationally with one another just for a year or so to keep this virus under control. I tell you, if they decided on an all-Ireland approach, which they should have done last spring, we would be in such a different place and we would absolutely have no cases. We would have very tight controls on our ports and airports, and we would have the occasional flare-up maybe from one or two people who's scrape through our public health controls, but we would be on those cases and we would have it under control, and the rest of us would be living a normal life and the economy would be completely different. And, you know, I would be in pubs singing songs and stuff like that, you know, but that was not to be. And I think it'll take a lot of study to work out what stopped that leadership appearing amongst our politicians that I also wish had been there.
But is it the case that we need both, not just the travel quarantines for people entering the Republic of Ireland, but we need an all-Ireland approach to travel quarantine? Because if we just do it and they don't do it in the north, there's a big, huge back door there for people to come and go as they please.
Yes, absolutely. And if the north decided to do it, it's a 310-mile back door. I mean, it's really impossible to do it without a cooperation. I mean, what you can do is show how it can be done, and you can go and you can talk about it with people, and you can say, please join us in this, it's in all of our interests. And you can get business people to talk north and south about how it's in their interest, because you know, places, one of the most interesting things, Sean, is when you look across the world at places that have adopted a really tight approach, kept COVID really, really down close to zero, if not at zero. Their economies have done really well. And it's places who've done badly in terms of the virus that have done badly in terms of the economy. So the business sector and the economy would have done so much better. So it is in everyone's interest. And when you've got something of phenomenal mutual interest like this, North and South, it is actually a great opportunity for some leadership and statesmanship, stateswomanship, and for cooperation across that border and across communities as well. You know, and when this virus is, when we've got the vaccination well sorted out, and when the virus is well under control, well then let people pick up again all these totems that stop them cooperating at the moment. But you just need to look at the death toll to see what a failure it has been in terms of the body politic in the island.
Yeah, and funnily enough, there is a precedent for this, a sort of precedent. BSE, Ireland, the Republic and the North cooperated very closely on that and weren't that fussed. They realised that the border isn't going to keep the BSE on either side, so they cooperated more.
Well, indeed, and there's a long history of very good cooperation around animal diseases. And if COVID-19 was a virus that predominantly affected cattle, sheep or pigs, you can be absolutely sure that there would be an all-island approach taken, and you could absolutely be sure that there would be very strict controls on that virus to stop that virus getting in through our ports or airports or any way onto the island. And why we can't do that for human beings when we've such a good track record of doing it to prevent animal disease is a question that's well worth pondering.
Mm. Is this indicator one way or the other? Is there much public support to introduce travel quarantine?
Oh, I think there is. One of the interesting things has been that the public have consistently been ahead of the politicians in seeing the value of restrictions. And I think most people understand the basic analogy here is that we're busy trying to mop up the floor at the moment after a disastrous set of relaxations north and south in November and December. Disastrous. And we're busy mopping up the floor. But we haven't fixed the hole in the roof that continues to let the water in. And the hole in the roof is the virus coming in through our ports and airports. And I think the public get that very well. And they understand the importance of it. And it does require a bit of leadership from the politicians to make that jump and get in tune with the public instead of standing back and watching and waiting. And then when they're forced to do things, they will do things. But this is a matter for public health, and that means prevention. And prevention's better than cure. A stitch in time saves nine, all of that stuff. You've got to get ahead of this virus. If you let it get ahead of you, you'll never get it under control. And that's what we've got to do. Even at this late stage, we can get ahead of this virus.
A couple of quick questions from our listeners, Gabriel. Somebody wants to know, what do you think of the fast antigen tests?
Oh, the lateral flow tests.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a role, but it's a very, very limited role. They're not that accurate. So it's, it could be used as a fishing expedition. For example, if you had a town or a village of hundreds of people where you had a lot of the virus and you just got everyone to do the test and you told them, you know, if you test negative, it doesn't mean you don't have the virus, but we'll find 50% of the people with the virus and help them isolate. That's the sort of way it should be used, because it can be even less than 50% you get, and certainly no more than 70% with those lateral flow tests. So they're not much use unless you're very clear that a negative doesn't mean that you don't have the virus.
Right. And Ian wonders, this is a bit of a trickier one. What do you think about the schools opening?
Well, I'd love to see schools opening. Schools are extraordinarily important, but they've got to open safely. And that means that the virus is at a low level in the communities in which they're situated. And I think particularly it means that we've done everything we can to make those schools safe for the kids, safe for the staff, safe for the teachers, and safe for the families that the kids are coming back and forward to, and the grandparents maybe in those families. So it is about making things safe. And I haven't seen as much effort as I would love to have seen happening with schools. So I would like to see schools being able to take over local halls or community facilities or commercial facilities or sports grounds or conference facilities, so that they could expand their classes, so that they could socially distance in class. And I would love to see funds available for schools to improve ventilation. Ventilation is absolutely so important. So to put in windows that can be opened, to put in vents, to put in mechanical ventilation systems, because we know it's an airborne disease, and we know that moving air and ventilating places properly is a great help. And for me, it's been a really interesting thing to look back on my growing up on the Falls Road in Belfast, in the poorest bit of Belfast, and we had a fantastic school built in 1933 with hugely high ceilings, huge high windows, opening top and bottom with a system of cords, facing south to the sun, no internal corridors in that school at all. It was all verandas around it. And it was built on the same principles which would really enable us to keep ourselves and our children safe from the virus these days. But things have changed. But there should be money put into schools to help them be safe.
Gabriel, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Dr. Gabriel Scally is a member of that independent scientific advisory group, and the case for travel quarantine takes place. That webinar takes place tomorrow at 12 to 1 p.m.
Moncrief on News Talk.